Today, I'm honored to talk with one of the first energy workers I ever worked with. So Jen Cabot is joining me today. Jen is a psychic spiritual coach and Reiki master working out of the New England area. So today, we're going to talk with Jen about what the word psychic means, right? Personally, I have preconceived notions or have had preconceived notions about the word psychic. I grew up in the 90s, so you say psychic, I think of Miss Cleo, right? Obviously, that has a level of psychic to it. There's many other definitions, right? So we're going to talk about what the word psychic means to Jen and how she integrates that work into her spiritual coaching. The idea of inner kid work and inner child work comes up quite a bit throughout the conversation. We talk a lot about the ego and a lot of integrating work to help the work that we do actually stay and become part of us. I'm so happy to talk with Jen. I'm honored to reconnect with one of the first people that had such an impact in my life as an energy worker without even really knowing it at the time. I hope you get something out of the conversation. We'll see you on the other side. All right, welcome back to the show. Today, I'm joined by Jen Cabot. Jen is the first person in tandem to introduce me to energy work. So you've all heard me talk about Hannah Talbot a lot on this show. She's been on the show quite a few times. Jen was the person that was with Hannah. They ran the session, the Reiki 1 session together that Monica and I were part of. And that's how I was introduced to Jen at that time. Heard Hannah talk, you know, immensely about Jen, about the amazing things that she does. But my experience with Jen was fantastic. You know, it was that activation of energy that we all have, but didn't know how to feel. And Jen was one of those people that helped me understand that feeling I could have too. You know, Jen is just an amazing human being. She's on the East Coast, so happy to get some of your time. I know we're very many hours apart, but Jen has a plethora of things that she works with. She's a psychic, she's a spiritual coach, and she's a Reiki master. So today we're going to kind of talk about what the word psychic means, right? You know, we get a lot of connotations from psychic. I grew up in the 90s, so when you say the word psychic to me, I think of Madame Cleo and Dionne Warwick. But then we have, you know, new TV psychics now, and that's, you know, we generally are influenced by media of sorts. Tyler Henry, you know, the famous, you know, little young man that goes around and just blows people's minds. But it's not always manifesting in that kind of way, right? And so Jen is here to kind of talk about that and what she does. So before we even get into that, Jen, thanks for being here. I love that we get to reconnect now and just kind of catch up with each other. And thank you so much for taking some time to be on the show with us.
Oh my goodness. Yes, of course. Now I'm super excited to expand into this world of woo a little bit with you and take a hot second to just sort of explore it, because there is a lot of taboo bits about it, and what an opportunity to really just kind of anchor in and see where it takes us. So thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So let's just dive right in. And you know, I know that you've been spiritual coach for a long time. That's without the word psychic, you know, attached to that. I've known you to be a spiritual coach. And so what does the word psychic mean to you? Like, how does that kind of manifest into what you offer for the clients you work with and the practices that you have?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So for me to really sort of, I actually feel like I have to take like a step back a little bit here, just because I'm like, you're so spot on in the fact that like I've been playing as a spiritual coach for a really long while, like 10 plus years. Actually, I'm going to go on the record and say when I was in utero. So we're going to go all the way back. Right? Okay. But I came out of my spiritual closet, you know, probably really like the last 5-6 years, where I was like, you know what? I'm going to throw this word psychic on the front end of this thing, knowing that like I'm going to make people uncomfortable and I'm going to turn people off. And I'm also going to excite and ignite other people who can see a part of themselves inside of that identification. And I think, you know, for me, all I can see right now is like Glinda the Good Witch, right?
Yes.
Right? Because like oftentimes, like, I don't know about you, but this word psychic, right? Like I think like Salem, witchcraft, dark magic, black, like it's like it's going to soul sucking, you know, it's like all this, like spell casting, right? It's got all this negative connotation to it. When really all it means is that you intuit energy. And, for me, I've just finally honed in on the craft of intuiting energy to the point to where I can follow these little energetic tethers when people are speaking with me, and then I can see, past lives. I can pick up on their trajectory. I can pick up on, people that are in their sort of vortex, their vicinity, their other sort of, nervous systems that are kind of kicking around, whether it's kiddos or loved ones. But really, truly, it's just the capacity to intuit energy. And we've all got a little bit of psychic in us anyway, right?
Right.
Like we are constantly picking up on things, whether you're just walking by a store or whether you're in the grocery store and someone's walking by you and you're like, oh, like I don't feel so well all of a sudden. Like that's that whole world of psychic. So it's not as scary or daunting. It's actually really simple in its complexity, which
Right.
is, you
Well, I think a lot of people are actually being turned on to the idea of what you just talked about, that feeling you have when you walk past somebody. And it's not nothing negative against, the person,
No.
right? It's your feeling, you know? And like that spontaneous empathy. I think a lot of people have gone through this random spontaneous empathy where I see clients now all the time that come to me and have like, I've been fine, quote unquote. Like they'll put their humanistic fine, right? I've got a job, my family's good. I'm okay. I've accepted the life that I have, and now I can't stop crying. I can't stop feeling. I don't think it's mine, but I can't stop feeling it. And all these things that people are experiencing now that I think a little bit of it is to do with COVID. We slowed down, and not COVID the epidemic of COVID, right? Not the actual virus of, right? We slowed down as a humanity. And that slowness showed a lot of people how not happy they were. And maybe that unhappiness started to trigger some of those deep-seated feelings that they've been repressing for a long time through a substance, through ignoring, through work ethic. There was something else I wanted to say real quick before we get back into it. You said the word psychic can be a trigger, right? And there's actually a quote on your website that I found that I love that I think works perfectly in this, because we have to identify what our triggers are in order to work with them, right? We need to know that we're being triggered by something and to be like, oh, well, is that how I actually feel about it? And you, one of your quotes on your website is, when you're brave enough to look underneath your patterns, that's when you become free. And if you can see that you're being triggered by, let's say, the word psychic, right? And you're brave enough to see and ask the question, why am I triggered by this word? The answer underneath could be the freedom you have. And it doesn't mean you have to believe in the word psychic, but just the simple fact of digging, of saying, you know what, maybe I don't know the answer, is like that door of opening of like, hey, let's find it together.
Well, and so many of us, though, so on paper, I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds great. But so many of us fear exposure. And so if you all of a sudden, and I've experienced this even with my own family, right? Like they have known me my entire life, but now all of a sudden, because I am out in the biggest ways, so many of them have just recoiled and they pull back. And I'm like, you guys, like seriously, like and I can have some compassion for that, right? Because me too, right? Like if I'm sitting next to one of my mentors who I know is also a psychic or a soul reader, I get super curious. I'm like, ooh, like I wonder what she's picking up on, right? But like I can definitely appreciate sort of the humanness in like, yeah, there's an element of exposure. And either that's something that you are really ready for, or it's something you're working really hard to run away from. There's space for both. Like there's no judgment. I'm not a psychic pusher. I'm not like, come heal your wounds, like come do the thing, like transformation for everyone. It's like, no. You really have to, like, you have to want that level of exposure to do the work for sure.
That's I think that's a really important point to make too. And for myself, like I'm 43 years old now, and I've just come to the grips and the understanding that I've been a pacifying nice guy my entire life. Like I've been trying to just show up as best as I can to not ignite a situation, to not add controversy, to not add any flavor, if you will, any color to it, right? I'm just there to agree, to go with the status quo and do all this shit, right? And And I think, you know, we get to a point now, like I've had a lot of conversations with people in their late 30s to 50s, right? In that age where they finally, they're like, you know what? I'm just going to speak my mind. I'm done holding my tongue. And it's vehement. It's venomous, right? Because there's so much pent up anger and energy for just being that nice person for so long that it's like, you know, what you just said. It's like, I don't give a shit anymore. I'm tired of hiding myself, but doing your due diligence to understand that what you've been holding back actually wants to be birthed forward, right? If you've just been holding back your opinion of racism and sexism and separatism and not actually understand what you're feeling and what you're believing, and all of a sudden you get to that breaking point and you're like, F this race, F this sex, whatever it is, and now I'm just speaking from my truth. I'm brutal honest. Okay, no, you just haven't had a chance to think about what you're saying. You're just angry, right? But when you have that opportunity to finally feel the gift that's been bubbling inside of you and understand that now you're at a place where you can capably expect this gift and utilize this gift and use this gift to help people. I think that's where that, okay, I'm done hiding myself. I don't give a shit if I scare people anymore. Here's the true me that I've thought very deeply about, and it's still going to change. But here's that version of me that I'm ready to responsibly and honorably put out to the world and to offer the help.
Yeah. Well, and for me too, you know, so much of, oftentimes with an element of exposure can also come this like element of righteousness, you know, where we're like, listen to me, I speak the truth, I have truth to share, you know, until you don't, right? Until like actually causing harm and until actually you're crossing a lot of boundaries. You know, so much of this work, and like, I have to be really sensitive to this element of exposure, because there can be too much of like, let me see if I can grab this. It's like a push energy, right? Converting, convincing, like squeezing things or people into other boxes, because now all of a sudden we feel like we have this spiritual sort of righteousness because we are, you know, it's like, we have to be really careful. You know, and so for me, it's only ever a like, hey, this is what I'm receiving, and I'm curious how this lands for you. Because the truth is, you are your own guru, right? And me too. And sometimes I even need mentors to hold up a mirror and be like, hey, lovey, like, look at your blind spots, right? Because I can't really see it, right? And it's the same thing in the way that I work with clients, where I'm like, this is what I'm intuiting. This is what's coming forward. And only if it makes sense for you, will it be true.
Yes. So how did you temper the ego of, you know, oh my gosh, like I have a thing now, you know, listen to what I say, because like this spirit just said the thing, and understanding like maybe that person's not ready to hear it. Maybe they don't have the belief structure to understand what you're saying. So like, how did you get to the point to where it's like, okay, I'm here to share when you're ready to listen, but I'm not just going to blurt everything I hear, right? Everything that I sense.
Yeah. Okay. This is such a, I'm like, oh, my entire body just got ignited. Cause I'm like, this is a juicy, juicy topic. And mostly too, because it's like, I also had to go through my own experience of experiences, plural, of putting my own mentors up on pedestals, being like, oh, okay. But they speak the language of spirit, right? They must know more than me. Cause I was like, okay, yeah, you have the power, you've got the knowledge, you know what's going on. So much of this work, in really sort of showing up integral, like it has so much to do with integrity. I know 100% of the time, especially in the beginning, if my ego is interjecting and wanting to fluff up the message, or if my ego, right, is wanting to even like omit certain things because it wants to be chosen, it wants to be seen a very certain way. So I had to really, this is like complete transparency. Like I really had to work with that, because this comes with a lot of responsibility, and it's not my right to strip anyone their process by withholding information or right. And I've had plenty of people sort of piss and moan and get really like, you know, like they didn't want to hear it. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, it means nothing about me. Like that's right. So part of the work, and this feels like not to minimize it, but it's like one of those elementary skill sets. We talk about boundaries. It's really about learning how to show up as the nurturer, not the caretaker.
Wow. That's a big difference,
Right.
but subtle
Yeah.
difference,
Oh
right?
yeah. Should we
Please, let's
explain?
unpack that.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, as a caretaker, we people please, right? As a caretaker, we mean well. We really, really, really do, right? Because we love, and it can be hard for us when we're caretaking to see people that we care about in a point of struggle.
Right.
So what happens, just to give this like a visual, is that energetically we stand in front of these, people that we love, or people that we're interviewing, our clients, and we see them in their points of struggles. And energetically, when we're caretaking, we say, you know what? Give it to me. I know just what to do. And then we carry it, and we're like, oh, okay, right. So that good girl or good boy in us is like, yeah, we're doing good things, like we're right. However, what happens in that moment is that we strip the other person the right to their process. We have no idea what people are needing to learn through struggle or challenge, or like we have no idea. So who are we to decide on their behalf that they can't navigate it?
Right. That's a bold
And
statement. That's a very a beautiful statement. I attribute that statement also to when you're not honest with somebody. And it's not like you're lying to the person, but you don't share the full truth. Like you're basically telling that person that they're not mentally stable enough to understand the information you're about to tell them. And that's a big slap in the face, right? When you really break it down, it's a big slap. I'm aware, I can understand it. I'm emotionally stable enough to understand this. Sorry, you can't. So I'm going to baby it down for you.
Or you don't have the capacity to hold this,
Right.
right?
Whew.
And it's really interesting when we start then to do the work of shifting into the space of nurturing, which is where we get to walk beside people, clients, loved ones who are at a point of struggle, and maybe we lower a hand and the other one's holding up a mirror, right? We get to remind them of their resourcefulness.
Ah, I love that.
Yeah, we get to like walk with them and we're like, hey, yeah, this is really intense, and I know that you know exactly what you need to thrive, and I'm gonna walk with you, and you got this, right? So in other words, we shift actually out of the space of helping, which implies victim, and we move into the space of what can I do to support?
Ah, love that. There's a
Yeah.
there's a there's an idea in the shamanic cultures called the sin eater, and it reminds me a lot of the caretaker definition you just gave, and the idea with the sin eater in the shamanic culture is that, the shaman will see the person that's sick and they will remove the illness from them. But that person that the shaman or the person that removes the illness has to then disperse that illness, right? They've got to get it out of themselves, right? Whether it's their spirit animal, their whatever process they have. But if they don't, they become what's called the sin eater, and they become the disease that they've removed, right? And if you continue that on, you continue to take on those diseases, and then you become a walking tumor, a walking boil. You become all of the sicknesses that you've tried to help people get over, but you've absorbed them all because you haven't responsibly found your way to disperse that. And it's that caretaker idea. It's like, I'm going to do all the work for you so you don't have to feel the pain and the suffering, right? So I'm going to take all of that from you. I'm going to take it from you and hold it because I'm strong enough to do that. And then you in turn become the person that's sick because you're not doing that for yourself. You don't have somebody to help you healthily disperse the energy that you've just now taken on.
Sure. Well, and we have no business. I don't want to carry other people's stuff. I got enough stuff to carry.
I'm lugging around backpacks and suitcases. I got shit all over there. Don't give me more shit, man. I got my
Right.
own.
No. The Virgo in me is like, no, we're purging now. We're purging. Like, what do we do? No, and it's interesting too. And this is where like we can offer up some grace because it's not linear, right? It's not black and white. Many of us who are drawn to this work, drawn to sort of serving in this way, we are in some capacity either a highly sensitive being, or we identify as being an empath. And many of us were conditioned, right? This is like years of conditioning as little munchkins that, like, who are you to keep your light to yourself? You need to go help so and so. You need to go make grandma feel better. You need to go give so and so a hug, right? Even when, like, these, like, we were like, I don't wanna hug him. And then, and we needed, like, protection when instead we were pushed, right? And so it makes sense to me then why, I mean, me too, I'm a recovering good girl, like through and through, recovering. Oh, I worked hard to be Princess Sweet, only to, like, inside be like, where's the fucking gasoline? Because I'm ready to blow shit up. Like, this isn't working for me. Fire, fire, fire. But that's the conditioning where it's like, oh, you're so sweet. You're such a love bug. Now you go love, go love, go love. Versus when we show up as the nurturer, we actually start to learn how to leave our light on and have teeth.
That's a great statement. That's a great statement. 'Cause there's love in those teeth. There's love in that bite, because that's like, hey, I love you enough to push you to do the shit your damn self, right? Yes, I can help you. I can hold that space, but go pick that damn shovel up yourself and start digging, right?
So that's the space of, like, learning how to vet, learning how to be discerning, learning the whole terrain about boundaries that are actually based on, like, it's foundational work that are based on, like, your standards around relating, shifting out of the script of expectations and actually shifting into the space of, like, wait a minute, what do I actually need? And do my wants click into that space, versus, like, this is what's expected of me, so this is how I, just sort of show up in the world. So it's big stuff, and like you said earlier, it's such a fine line, but it's a, like, glowing fine line to shift out of caretaking into nurturing. So yeah, that was really the work for me. That was the bulk. I really had to sit, and some of it was ugly. Some of it was, like, there were some hard and fast lessons around integrity
And I
so
imagine it's not like a check the box, we've got that done. That's probably a check back in every once in a while and be like, okay, am I still nurturing or am I falling back to that caretaking? And where am I at? Because, once you know that path, it's easy to kind of go back to that path because you know that pattern, right? And that pattern makes sense in your brain in some kind of way. So it's like hard to do this new thing until those tracks get a little bit deeper that you can kind of sled in.
Sure. Yeah, integrating. It takes a bit, right, to integrate because the humanness is so hardwired to talk us out of our soul knowing. So it can be easy to keep, like, jumping into the ocean, going back into the fishbowl, jumping into the it's like, and it can take a hot minute before we're like, wait, I cannot tolerate this any longer. Like, I'm in the ocean. Like, fine, I'm in it, and again, that's just where that element of grace can really come in, and it's a lifelong process of refining and owning and recommitting and, working your process. But yeah.
So when you finally were got your self-confidence to be calling yourself a psychic and to step into that modality and to step into that gift, how did spiritual coaching and psychic kind of start to mush together for you in these offerings that you have?
Yeah, that's such a beautiful question. I only chuckle because I'm like, man, the amount of time that I spent trying to keep everything so separate, where I was like, okay, Reiki over here, psychic in the closet, in the shoebox behind the thing over there, it was an issue for me until it wasn't. Until I just, because I kept getting confirmation, I continued to get validation from clients where they're like, wait, they're like, you call yourself a mindset coach. This isn't mindset coaching. And I'm like, it's not. They're like, you're a psychic. And I was like, oh. So they were, like, outing me anyway, right?
If you're not going to do it, we're going to say it.
And so at some point, I was just like, okay, whatever. Like, it's the whole thing, right? And I can't even tell you the spaciousness and the freedom that just that little shift of just owning every aspect of me, knowing that, like, I'm on purpose and I belong. Right. And, like, the people that need this medicine, they find me. So the way that it's blended So for me, I see pathways for clients who are at a point of transition. So someone will come in, oftentimes, with whatever, like career stuff, relationship stuff, like they're unhappy. They've done the counseling thing, there's no breakthrough. So for me, I don't necessarily listen to the words or the stories, but what I do is I've tuned myself into how to feel the weight around certain words. And that activates my psychic. And then my psychic, she goes hunting. She's a hunter. She's like a little investigator. Yeah, she's like, hunt, hunt, hunt. I always feel it. And I'm like, oh, there she is. Because then it like becomes a tether, and I follow the tether down in, and I can see then like the core wound. And I'm like, oh, and then it's like all the symptoms from these core wounds. So if it's like fear of exposure, right? And then maybe one of the symptoms is like overthinking or hiding. Deprivation is another one, right? But then maybe a symptom would be under-earning. And they can't quite seem to ever break out of this thing, right? They're just in this loop with under-earning. Then from there, I just tune in. Then it's like intuitive strategies for inner and outer kind of come on board. So the social worker in me gets activated. And then we really get to dance. Then we really get to play. And then then we're in it. Because at that point, it's like it's all exposed. It's all in the living room. There's nothing to hide from. They're like, oh, there's the core wound. Here are the protector parts. Here's some strategy with like how I can actually work with this and work through it without having to actually share the story as to why this thing is here. So that's how I've kind of like, it's like this really beautiful, intricate braid, it all just plays off of each other.
Well, I think there's so much beauty in that too. I've heard so many people talk about how they're so sick of talk therapy and just regurgitating their story and let's talk about it again. Let's look at it from this angle and now this angle. It's like reliving the trauma. And I understand like talk therapy has its place, right? But if that's the main modality people are working with, therapists are working with, and it's not working, having somebody like yourself that can see that, that trigger or that thing and find ways to let them bring it up in a way that seems supported. It's not just talking about the trauma over and over again from different angles, right? You're starting to unpack it finally. And there's a practice, a friend of mine, she's a massage therapist. She does a thing called Jin Shin Do. And it sounds very similar to what you're talking about, where you trace those trauma points back to the origin and then you start to unpack them. And she does it through massage therapy, which is freaking amazing. I've never met anybody else that does that, but it's so beautiful too when you're so our ego's very strong, and it's a conniving little bastard, but it needs to be there, right? And it needs to be appeased because it's been such a big part of our Western lives for such a long time, and so the talk therapy is just like beating a dead horse. But when you can start to, like you said, start asking probing questions or finding different ways in there, it allows the ego to think that it's solving its own problem. And when that happens, the ego's like, champion, we did it, gold star, right? Even though it's had help and it needs the help, it's that roundabout way of letting it do its own kind of due diligence to make it feel like it has its importance that we've shown the ego that it needs in the Western culture.
Sure. Well, and also, I'm just gonna go on the record and say too, like 100% of the time, like the ego is important. It's our protective mechanism. And our inner kiddos are very closely connected to our egos. Because when our inner kiddos start to get insecure around whatever, a move, taking a step, relationships, oftentimes, unless you've already had the training and you're like well-versed in this whole sort of language, what happens is that when our inner kiddo gets activated, it often bypasses us as the adult, right now, the adoptive mother or the adoptive father, and it actually goes straight up into the critical parent for parenting. It goes straight up into the skeptic. So this is where all of those things, right? Anxiety, depression, overthinking, procrastination, like on and on and on, yo-yoing. That's all like the inner kiddos like flip the fire alarm, and these are her or his like very specific ways of protecting. So you can't just kick ego to the curb because your inner kiddo is tethered to it. So then it's like you're pushing the whole thing off the cliff's edge. That's not good for anyone.
Right.
That's not. So instead, what this work affords us is the capacity, the bandwidth to actually interrupt this pattern, right? Because the ego is stunning. It's stunning. It's actually really adorable when you can kind of like take a step back and you're like, oh, it's just trying to like, give me a warning, right? And so it's like you get to learn how to be with these parts in a different way. So the opportunities to learn how to really interrupt this pattern of that like never ending like ego storm, so that you can really learn how to tune into this younger one to offer the reassurance to meet the needs so that you can continue stepping. The ego just wants progress.
Right.
Ego wants us to move, right? And so when emotions come up, the ego's like, well, shit, we don't know what to do with that. Right? So the ego's like, shut it down, shut it down, shut it down, shut it down, right? You can feel that, right? I can feel it. And then our inner kiddo's like, ow, but like, I can't see and I can't breathe and I'm hungry. And, and then our adult self is like, peace. Like, I'm saturated, I'm overwhelmed, I cannot cope. So it's just learning. We often come to this from like a mind, body, soul. It's flipping it. It's like we got to come from a soul, body, mind. You got to go in, check it out, and then start to do the integrating work. So we're working in tandem. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh, there's just, I mean, I fell under the misunderstanding that I had I got a good childhood, right? Parents were great. They were together until they passed. Didn't get abused, had shit when we needed to, struggled when we struggled a little bit, but overall kid, childhood was great, right? And but I think what I didn't understand is like there's so much wrapped up in a quote unquote good childhood that still has to be unpacked. There's still trauma that's there. There's still like just because my parents didn't beat the shit out of me doesn't mean like they didn't tell me I couldn't have a toy at Target one time and I threw a fucking temper tantrum and they dragged me out and threw me in the car. That's trauma that I induced on myself. They did their best to try to diffuse it. I threw a fit. I was kicking, screaming, and all that shit, right? So even you could have the quote unquote best childhood, but there's still things to unpack from your childhood that's wrapped up in the way that you present yourself as a human being now. And I think that is a hard concept to grasp for a lot of people because, on paper, it's like, nah, we were good. I didn't get sexually abused. My parents were cool. Everybody was good. I had friends, I had brothers, all that shit, right? But again, like there's still that stuff. Like something I just unpacked for myself that blew my fucking mind, and I'm still trying my hardest to wrap my head around it. And it's funny because like in these situations, I tell these stories all the time as things of like positivity around my childhood, right? My dad was a coast-to-coast truck driver, was gone for months and months and months at a time, and then home for a weekend, and then gone for months and months, home for a weekend. Did that for like 30 plus years, right? Barely saw my dad growing up, but he was a good man, right? My mom and dad were together. And my mom raised three boys by herself, rambunctious little assholes, right? We're all 2 years apart, roughly, so we're all close in age. We'd gang up on mom and do crazy shenanigans and shit. And then mom would get pissed off and she's like, I'm calling your father, right? And this is right when cell phones started happening, diesels had cell phones and shit. And mom would be like, he's gonna fucking yell at you. You're in trouble, right? That phrase, in trouble. And I mean, we get on the phone with my dad, and my dad would just take a deep breath and be like, hey, I'm 1,000 miles away right now. I can't do shit. So stop pissing your mom off. Just play politics. And that was the phrase he used, just play politics. Appease her. Just tell her what she wants to hear, even if you don't believe it, just tell her that. And I'm like, cool, dad, I can do that. So from the age of 7 until I was probably in my 40s, 42, 43, I've been just telling people what they want to hear because I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to make people upset. I don't want to have to backtrack and apologize. So I'm just going to be like, oh, yeah, you don't like that? I don't like that either. Fucking cool, man. Pizza sucks? Ah, fuck pizza, man. Ranch on pizza, that's the worst, right? not even ever having an opportunity to explore that myself, right? And so unpacking that stuff, you know, like, and again, my dad had the best intentions. He just didn't want to get yelled at himself, right? So he's like, hey, just stop pissing your mom off.
Yeah.
It was me that took that as gospel and said, okay, from now on, every situation I'm going to come in contact with, I'm just going to be the nice guy. I'm just going to appease everybody. So we all got shit to unpack, and it can be pretty, pretty devastating when you get to that point, especially if you're not expecting it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no one is immune. No one is immune. I am serious. Right. Well, and this word trauma, gosh, we do think about it as like trauma with a big T. We think about those big catalytic events, which it can be that. Oftentimes, though, it's those little things, those little hash marks that, yeah, right, which you're sort of speaking to that just kind of compound. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a point where you're like, wait, I'm in certain relationship patterns with women now, right? Now you're on your own and things are unfolding. And you're like, wait, I actually feel like when I tune into this for you, and I'm like, I really love that because it registers, because this is so unique to your soul's curriculum around this perfect storm of like this existential crisis where you're like, wait, so who am I? Like, yeah. What is my purpose? And like, how and what do I do to align to it? Right. It's like you needed some of that context to really push you up into the light where you're like, oh, I'm definitely not that. That's a script. Right. Like that's a, right. Those are things that people assign to me and I'm this, but what does that look like now? And how does that voice sound? And mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to unpack, you know, and it's almost like you're reinventing the person that's always been there, right? You're finally adding context to that person that's been hiding, you know, and allowing that person to speak out and to be truthful and heard and to be traumatized and to unpack some of that stuff that's happened around that, you know? But that's where that magic happens. That's the uniqueness of your own journey. You know, like you were talking about trauma with a capital T, big capital T trauma. Yes. 100%. Not a big fan. Right. But if you got 1,000 lowercase T's, that sucks too. Right. Right? 2 lowercase T's, a lowercase, whatever it is. Right. Trauma is trauma. Right. Body Keeps the Score is a great book. It tells us that trauma just manifests in the body as trauma. It doesn't matter the level of the trauma. It just sees it as trauma. And then you got to unpack that shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you want to, yeah. Because when we, to put this, because my brain likes to work in like equations, to make this super visual, because some of these words, some of these theories, they can be hard to like grab onto. It's like the word self-love, right? We're like, what the hell is self-love? Like, how do I know that I love myself? Right. It's like one of those things where I'm like, oh, I always make a face. Okay. Okay. So trauma. It's oftentimes not the event that's the issue. It's how we choose to hold it, right? Like you held that and then it festered and it became whatever it became, right? So the cool thing is that when you can actually look at trauma for what it is, and you don't need to ever get into like why you feel a certain way about the trauma, but if you do the work around negating the energy that's around it, then what you're left with is profound wisdom. And so, right, like many of us, we kind of play with this term, like the wounded healer. Mm-hmm. But like us wounded healers, you know, again, it doesn't matter if you got big T, little T, whatever. We become the best storytellers. And you're here to do work, right? So it's like you needed these experiences. You needed this moment of like your come to Jesus moment where you're like, hold up, like none of this about my, like, what is going on here in order for your clients to find you,
right,
to access you. Right. So that's the, like, we get to learn how to blame intelligently where it's like the human part of us is like, ow, that wasn't fun. And like, wow, look at me prolonging the suffering. That's the humanness. But then the other side of that is like, okay, so what did my soul choose? Why did my soul choose this? You know, like, what about this experience was I needing to learn?
Yes. There was I did a work with a shamanic group a couple times a year, and we did a retreat in Sacramento I think October last year. And one of the messages, we made a medicine wheel. It was amazing. And one of the messages I got while meditating that medicine wheel was basically paraphrasing what you just said. It's, you needed to learn the lesson, right? The details around the lesson being learned might have sucked, and it's hard, and I'm sorry you had to go through that to learn this lesson, but clearly that lesson was important. The message I got was take the lesson, integrate the lesson, lose the fucking story, right? The details around the lesson that you just learned mean shit, right? I learned very hard way that I was a shitty dad for a long time, and now I'm not. I'm present with my kids. I'm there with them. They, you know, come and stay with me. We're there, right? And I had to learn that lesson of importance to know that not only just showing up for my kids, showing up for myself, showing up for everybody in my life, right? So I had to go, in my mind, to the most dramatic abandonment, which is my children, to understand how bad that feels to not do it again. If I live in that feeling of what it felt like to abandon my kids and not to be there for them, I'll never get out of fucking bed. But if I appreciate the lesson that I've learned of how important it is to have those beautiful human beings in my life and every human being that's in my life or will be in my life, there you go. Take that and run with it, please. Leave the details, but take that lesson and fucking run with it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's one of the biggest messages we can have as a humanity is take the lesson, right? Sorry you went through the trauma you had to. Embrace the lesson. Leave that story alone, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because so many of us are, I feel like so many of these lessons, you can boil it down. It's all about like allowing and receiving love.
Right.
And it's like love with a capital L, though. It's that notion that like we get to plug in to this like universal thing that we call love with a capital L just because. You don't have to work for it. It's actually not conditional. You don't have to prove yourself worthy of love. Like, right. And then we've got all these devices that kind of keep us like kicked out. So I hear you. We're always choosing pain. There's always an element of pain. But the difference is moving forward, you can choose a route where you actually get to shorten your experience with pain.
Right.
Maybe it doesn't need to be so exaggerated and drawn out and impactful, but it all comes with pain. That's what, you know, jumps our heart. It's what kind of keeps us awake to the work.
So when you work with clients with, you know, the spiritual psychic idea and working on their inner kid stuff, are there, do you find people that are resistant at first to maybe that inner kid idea of like, no, I'm good. Don't want to go there. Or is it maybe even sometimes they find some little bit of trauma that was in there that like, oh my God, I had no idea that was there, but still we're resistant to go there in that first place.
Yeah. Some, because it's really delicate.
Yeah.
Right. So oftentimes before we go into doing, so I work a lot with breath and sort of somatic journeying. And so there's a lot of preparation before, and, you know, we give the brain, we give the intellect a ton of information around what to expect, what this looks like, the context of it, you know, many. So here's, and again, like there is a time and space for therapy. I loved my therapist for years until I was like, okay, I need to move in it. Like I need to move through this. Like I didn't need support in organizing my thoughts, right? I needed something different. So many of us, oftentimes when clients come to me, it's the same sort of situation where they've spent a lot of time talking around these things, but they just don't have the context around what it actually means to do the work. Like, how do you move from talking about inner kiddo stuff or hurt feelings or trauma to actually like doing the work with the trauma to move through it? So it's really delicate. And sometimes, you know, in the middle of a journey, they're having sensations that are feeling really unsafe to them. And so then we kind of back out of the journey and we might do like a hypnotic anchor to kind of get them regulated again.
Okay.
A lot of times it's just our inner kiddos. Like they're, if they're not used to being seen or held with love, it can be really uncomfortable for these parts of us to then be like, holy shit, like the floodlights are here. Like I, you know, like, you know, they're like, why?
You see everything now. Oh my God, get back. I don't want to.
Yeah.
What is a hypnotic anchor? You just mentioned that.
Yeah. So a lot of the work that I do with clients is around getting them regulated so we can do the hard work around dropping in.
Okay.
And it's like we can't move through things if they're flying around, right? If they're like, ah, this isn't safe. I don't trust my body. I can't be in my, then I'm like, whoa, we got to get you back in your body. So a hypnotic anchor, it's just a really beautiful way to work with breath, and you sort of you track it. You bring yourself, from whatever space you're in. If you're rating yourself at a 7, you bring yourself down to a 0. I work with them around a very specific breathing technique. And in that moment, when they're sitting at a 0, they actually have an experience with healing. And so it's like the ego then starts to collect data. The back brain starts to collect data around how safe it is to actually heal. So the resistance starts to let up a little bit, right? So that's always really yummy to be able to see. And they feel that. They're like, whoa. Something just clicked, something, and they're like, and I didn't have to talk about it. I'm like, no, and you didn't have to talk about it, right?
It sounds
Because
like that it kind of sounds like a nonverbal mantra, you
yeah,
know?
essentially it's a hypnotic, it's like working yourself up through just moving the breath, letting the breath massage,
Wow, that's beautiful.
and holding the breath. And it's yeah, and it's something that it could be like a 90-second process. And we're so conditioned to go to the intellect for the reasoning, like why? Only then, but if you were to ask a toddler, why did you do that? They're going to give you a bazillion different reasons, and you never quite, right? It's the same thing. Our intellect is like, oh, it's this and this, like it's just going to keep, right? So one of the biggest breakthroughs with clients is in them really buying into the belief, like the truth that like you don't ever actually have to know why. To just drop in, do the work, and move through. You don't have to know why you're feeling what you're feeling to feel what you're feeling.
That's a confusing statement for a lot of people. Yes, I agree with that 100%. Because then, yeah, we intellectualize it, and that's the biggest myth of the brain is that the brain can solve the brain's problems.
Yeah, the brain's like, listen to me. I'm so important. Listen to all the things that I have to say to you. But it actually doesn't ever solve a thing. Like, it just compounds it. So, what if we actually flipped the script, gave you some tools to feel safe, to get regulated in your body, right? So then you actually experience yourself clicking into healing. Then, what if on the other side of that, because you just released, you get those nuggets? Because it comes, right? Those inspired, those like, oh, the breakthrough, the tears, that whatever that is, or the profound, like, oh, okay, I like, oh, my, okay, I'm good. Like, then all of that chatter just goes away. You don't have to, like, it's gone.
There's a book I'm reading right now, The Creative, I think it's called The Creative Way. It's by Rick Rubin, a famous music producer, guru, all this amazing guy. And he's talking about, you know, like the creative process. And for me, when I create, I used to be a songwriter. I used to do like a lot of writing and stuff like that, music. I would have to have things silent, right? Like I want to think, I want to be able to focus, but even that didn't work, right? You know, I never found my like true writing process or things like that, creative process. And listening to his book, he's talking about like, you know, because he's worked with people from like System of a Down to like, you know, individuals of the Beatles and stuff like that, right? Everywhere in between. And he was saying, you know, like if you want to be connected, put on as much noise as you can around you. Put on a book, put on a music, put on music, put on the TV, put on all these things, because all of those are channeling some kind of source energy, and it might be giving you a message that you might not have had, right? And so, you know, like having those quote unquote distractions around you might actually open yourself up to the messages that you're kind of intellectualizing, like you just said, oh, I think I can think all the things, but then all of a sudden you have the radio on, and it's like, Adam, you want Taco Bell? And it's like, I don't want Taco Bell? Why the hell? Maybe I, what did I eat? When's the last time I ate something green? Oh my God, I haven't eaten a salad in 3 weeks. Holy shit. I can go get it healthy, right? You know, and it's like that message wouldn't have came in, or I wouldn't have given it credence if I had just been in my own head about this shit, right? So it's cool to like just to reapproach things differently, right? Find different ways to integrate your shit, right?
Well, and what I share with my clients all the time, because by the time they come to me, sometimes they might feel broken, but I'm like, oh, baby girl, I'm like, all we're doing, it's just 2% tweaking, right? By the time they come to me, it's typically, right, they've done the self-help books, they've taken the courses, they've done the therapy. It's just that little, like, okay, so now what do I do with all of this? How do I put all of this together? And most of the time, and this is what you're kind of speaking to, it's like we have to get regulated so that we can find our points of inspiration, which is alignment. And to be inspired is to be infused with spirit. And it's really hard for us to access that sweet spot of like, all is well. If we're out of our bodies and and we're feeling and we're like buying into this misbelief that somehow we're broken or we're too much or too set, like all the things, it's even though it seems so complicated, it's really simple. It's really simple. And that's the point of frustration for the ego, because the ego's like, no, like we're all Spartans and we need to like go to war.
If it was simple, we would have figured it out by now. Clearly, this is the most complicated problem in the world, you know?
And the cool thing is, it's like I can only speak to this in this sort of way because it's like a me too, right? Like I put myself intentionally into situations with healers, where mentors, programs, where I was like, no, I have to figure myself out. I need to figure out like what, how am I ticking here? And what do I do with all these versions of me that just want to blow everything up all the time? Like, this is insane. This is not sustainable, right? And I even had a mentor where he was like, you're about to blow up your life. You might want to consider not doing that. And I was like, wow.
But why?
And he was just like, stop running. Like, sit with this. And I was like, I can't. And he was just like, sit with this. Like, right. And then it meant me learning how to take parts of myself on walks, and I would just be weeping. And I'd have like my inner teenager on one arm and my kid on the other, because I was like, I feel so overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. But that was one of my protector parts, which was like, we blow the shit up. We just run. We don't know how to be accountable. We don't want to be responsible,
Well, we got to learn how to sit with discomfort. We're a very later type culture. I talk about this in my sound baths a lot. When we set intentions, because a lot of times we don't, yoga practices, energy work, right? Stuff like that. We'll be told to set an intention, right? But very rarely do I like set an intention to go grocery shopping, right? I'm going to go grocery shopping and like get all the healthy things for my family. I'm just like, oh, I got to check this box off this task, right? But when we can set an intention and we can move towards something with an understanding of what you're trying to accomplish, I think there's an opportunity for us to really kind of dig deep into ourselves when we can honestly say that we don't know what we're looking for. And just to mine it out, right? Just to mine it out. Like I feel something around this thing. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to be curious. Like that quote you have, right? When you can be curious enough to look underneath and you can find something there, right? You can find the fear. But if we're not courageous enough to lift that manhole up or to dig that hole, then we're just going to sit with that discomfort in a constant basis. And it just festers, right? It doesn't allow movement for you, for anybody else. And so like when you can look at your own self, it almost gives you that empathy to hold space for somebody else, right? It's like when I can uncover all the nasty shit that I've done and understand the way that it makes me feel, I might be able to now hold space for somebody else that might just have this understanding that just popped up in front of them that just threw their entire world off their axis, right? It's like, okay, cool. I haven't gone through what you've gone through, but I've gone through some pretty good hell. So let's share this space together. We're going to create this container. We're going to unpack this together.
Well, that's the whole nurturing thing, right? Because it's like, who are either you or I to judge anyone else's timing? Or like, only you can decide when enough is enough. Only I can decide when enough is enough. And there are things, like I guarantee you, there are people in my vicinity that look at my life and they're like, wow, girl, And I'm like, but when I was in it, I saw no other way, right? Like I was like, it ha like this is the way, right? This is the way that the lesson presented itself, these were the relationships, you know, whatever. And now on the other side of it, you know, I am wide awake, and that's intentional. And I'm very intentional just around choice, you know, like, what am I choosing? And is this supporting the version of my future self? And, but it wasn't always like that, you know? And like, you know, like ultimately we are the only ones that can choose differently. So it's like, we're in it until we're just not. And there's no judgment either way. It's right. Like,
well, it's, you know, the idea of reincarnation, like we're all on our own paths, right? We've got to live this version of this life. And if we are racist, sexist, you know, idiotic in some person's idea of what that is, then, you know, I'll do my best to share space as long as you're not in intruding in my space. But if you're on that path, then like clearly your soul has a lesson to learn. That's a pretty big fucking lesson, right? You know, it's still your discernment to involve those people in your life or not. But it kind of takes that pressure off of like, it's my job to change you. And whether we were verbally saying that or not, a lot of the conversations that I either witness or a part of, that's what it feels like. It's like, no, it's my job to save you and change your mind, because clearly you're the ignorant one. It's like, well, let's just conversate to conversate. Like, if I'm talking to somebody and I understand that their purpose of that conversation is not just to share their information, is to change my mind. That's a big one for me. But if we're, even if it's opposing opinions, I could be talking to the most racist person across from me. And if we're just holding space and having a conversation and you're not trying to convince me I'm wrong and I'm not trying to convince you you're wrong, we're just sharing information. I think there's a lot of beauty that can come from that. There's a lot of common ground that can be met and understood from the open ideas and the sharing of conversations, instead of, oh, you're ignorant. I perceive your ignorance. I'm going to shut you down. And then that perception of ignorance met with aggression is just going to cause that person to dive deeper into their ignorance, right? So letting this breadth of the conversation start to happen so we can actually understand that there is a human trying to figure out life just like you, that has just been presented with different information that triggered their emotional state in a different way, just like you, right? Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. adds that layer of humanity and maybe that empathy that we can say, hey, we're all doing this together, right? We're working from different points. Let's try to be as best as we can going forward.
Yeah, and a big part of that, because it just feels important to add to this, you know, in those sorts of heated conversations, I feel like we could like unpack this, like this just opened up a whole other thing around relating. And this is part of the work too, right? This is part of like showing up as the nurturer, being integral, being accountable, is that if you are finding yourself activated, that's okay. Let's just be crystal clear around that. But that you actually support yourself by showing up in a way where you're giving voice to that activation, where you're like, you know, this has been an informative conversation. I'm going to step aside, you know, just noticing that like my stomach's on fire right now and I need a minute, right? Like, because partly too, we as a, and I feel like this is such a big topic, but I think we struggle with conflict. We don't know how to do conflict because many of us don't understand the art of repair.
Right.
And we also see conflict as like the unspoken evil, right? It means that something is wrong. And it can mean that. But oftentimes it just means that we're stretching beyond a limiting belief, or we're stretching beyond like a perspective, right? A lens that we have. And it's uncomfortable. And so we want to armor up. So there's a lot in there where, right, those hot topics really kind of put us in those situations where we feel tested. We feel like, okay, I have to really work to stay in my body and present and available for this thing when everything inside of me wants to like go push them out the window or whatever.
Yep. And when you're a recovering people pleaser that has finally reached their point of the fuck it's, then you're probably going to say a lot of shit that you don't mean, you haven't really thought about, and you're probably going to regret. But it just comes out because there it is, right? Here we go, you know? But at the same time, like sometimes like that stopper needs to be pulled out, right? We need to get pull that stopper, let all the vehemency just drain and create that whirlwind and that funnel as it starts to go down the drain, because we didn't even know that toxicity was there until we pulled that plug, right? And then all of a sudden here comes all the shit that you're going to have to unpack and apologize for. But that's your journey, right? You needed to know that was inside of you, and that emotion had a voice that strong to figure out if you want to do something about it or not.
Sure. Yeah, pathway to redemption, baby. It's accountability and responsibility
Most
every time.
definitely. Well, Jen, I want to honor your time because I know you got clients coming up, and even though we just opened up like a whole big can of worms that we
Yay.
could
Yeah.
do another hour on, well, let's how about we flag that for a future conversation? Because I'd
Yeah.
love to get you back, and you know, just love what you do, and you know, I just I'm so happy to have been put in on your path, right? We, you know, you weren't somebody I was seeking out, right? You know, the Hannah was a beautiful friend of mine. I didn't even want to do Reiki. I had no,
Okay.
I'd never even taken a session before. I wanted to support my fiance at the time, and so we were
Sure,
looking to
sure.
do shit together. And then many amazing things happened that day, one of which was being introduced to you. And I'm so happy that you're doing what you're doing, that you've unpacked the offerings that you can for humanity at this point in time, and you're still continuing to unpack more that you can offer. I'm just so happy to have you in the sphere of influence that's around me, and I appreciate what you do.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was such an honor to connect and to be on this. I'm very excited to see what's around the bend because I think, yeah,
Always.
perfect.
Well, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yes, you too. All right.
Thank you so much for spending time with Jen and I. Check out the show notes for ways to get in touch with Jen or ways to support the show. Obeisance and love. We'll see you next time.